Hey man, Jay Muse, and you're listening to Skip to the End, Snoochie Boochies.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 68 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And it's going to be a fun show this week. Our main review is Ghost in the Shell, the American remake of the classic Japanese anime. And I'm sure we've all got a fair few thoughts to share on that.
Kinda.
Mm-hmm. Mark, what is our rewatch this week?
Kevin Smith's Dogma.
Yes. A film that you like very much, Mark, because you're a Kevin Smith fan. I'm not a Kevin Smith fan, as our regular listeners will well know, but it is a film, historically, I've always said I liked. Will that hold true?
Find out. I'm nervous. More nervous about this than Ghost in the Shell. A lot of the fans out there give you, oh God, Ben's always ripping into Kevin Smith. This could be an episode where you actually praise him.
I know.
Stay tuned.
I've never done it in 67 prior episodes, but I might praise the man today. Gemma, what is our topic of conversation?
We're going to be talking about our top three 1960s films, so it should be a very interesting one indeed.
A very interesting one, and a little bit of a shout out to our long-time listeners who loved our feature Skip Back in Time. We never got as far back as the 60s, so this is for you. We've got plenty of other stuff coming up on the episode. We've got the second round of High Five.
High Five!
Which was our wildly successful game show. Everyone's been loving it on social media, haven't they?
Massively. The tweets, I even put like a collage of all the people's comments as well, because it was just insane. People are saying they had to pull over their car, they had to stop, they were going in a class and people were looking at them on the bus and the train, and everyone thinks that everyone's mental now because they're just giggling in the streets at our podcast.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the old days when I used to listen to Carl Pilkington.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know.
The amount of times I look like a nutter on a bus listening to Carl Pilkington. Yeah, it's very, very true. We've got listener questions. We're going to be masturbating over Ben Stiller. A whole heap of other stuff. All the usual goodies we bring to you here on Skip to the End. And our listener base is continuing to grow. We've mentioned this on the last couple of episodes. We're getting bigger and bigger. We're getting more listeners. Please do follow us on Twitter at STTE Podcast. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast. And check out our fantastic website, skiptotheend.co.uk. Now, Mark, we've hit another big milestone in terms of listeners and plays, haven't we?
I have.
Sold out to you.
You two can join in as well. We have, yes, we've hit 4 million, which is just mind-blowing. It's just absolutely crazy. When I put it out there and you see people saying, oh my God, like other podcasts are saying, like, oh, we've just hit 1,000. We've hit 4 million downloads, which is in 2.5 years.
Unreal. Absolutely unreal.
You haven't.
Oh, I'm still taking the glory for it. Come on. I'm on that logo.
You've had about 800,000 since you've joined.
Well,
it's not bad.
Not bad.
I'll take it. I'll take it.
So we thank you all for the people who've been there since day one and the people who are joining us recently. We thank you all and we hope that we can keep providing the great quality audio that we're known for.
Which is also available on iTunes, on Podomatic, on everything else now.
TuneIn.com, you can get it now as well if you've got an Amazon Echo or a Sonos device.
Yeah, Sonos is amazing. I was in the bathroom the other day and I was like, I want to listen to myself.
Like we've all done at some
point. Forget music. And I could listen to myself now on my Sonos in there while my wife's listening to Madonna or something in the lounge. It's amazing. Sonos and Skip to the End are the perfect combination.
Synergy.
We're not being paid by them either. But
not yet.
Yet.
All right, enough of this. Let's get started.
To kick things off, we're going to be discussing our top three 1960s films, a time where the skirts were short and the hair was long. On the head. The hair was long on the head.
It was the 70s, wasn't it, when it was very bushy?
Yeah, that was another time.
I don't think it was shorter prior to that, though. I don't think that was a thing in the 70s where they decided to start growing longer hair there.
On the head.
Let's just move on. We're a family podcast. I'm really trying to really mould this.
Yeah. So, I think I'm going to ask Mark to kick this one off. So what's your first choice?
Doctor Strangelove.
Yep, I've got it as well.
Have you really?
I have indeed, yeah.
Oh, we've already done the whole duplicate.
Wow.
I think this film is an absolute masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And we joke on this podcast where I'm always saying that everything is a masterpiece, but this film is one of Kubrick's masterpieces. He's got quite a few in his back catalogue if you think about the films he's brought out. This film basically tells the story of a nuclear war all done by the simple press of a button that didn't go right. Mm. But the reason I've chose this film is Peter Sellers. Yep. I think he is by far one of the greatest actors in the world. And so much so that this, it'd be funny, if we pulled him out of the pot, I think this might be his film that's the best.
Yeah.
It's a difficult one. But this film I'm only choosing mainly because of Peter Sellers. From the whole moment he's on the screen is unbelievable. But also we get a young Darth Vader.
Yes, James Earl Jones is in it, yeah.
A very young Darth Vader.
I think it was his first film.
He's not Anakin at this point, by the way. But not, I mean, he's not actually Darth Vader in the film. That would be a whole new war.
Yeah.
But, you know, this film is just unbelievable. It's weird to say, I've never laughed so much at the end of the world in a film. This is a nuclear war. This shouldn't be something you laugh at, but it's the way that Kubrick does it. I'm Ben, I'm absolutely loving the fact that you've actually chose this as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a great start.
I think it's a magnificent film. I think it's a really, really good political satire. I think it manages to be a highbrow satire, but also a really silly comedy as well. It manages both of those things equally. You're right to point out this being Peter Sellers' film. He is fantastic because he plays three characters. So he plays the titular character of Dr. Strangelove, but he also plays the British RAF officer, Captain Mandrake, as well as the US President, Merkin Muffley, which is one of the greatest characters names in the history of film. And most people remember him playing the Nazi scientist Dr. Strangelove, but for me it was the character of Mandrake that was the best, this sort of stiff upper lip British soldier. I thought he was just so laugh out loud funny in that role. I wanted to see more of him as that character out of the three, but it's a wonderful performance all ends up. And he was nominated for an Oscar, I think, for it.
He wasn't.
I know he was.
Yeah. Right. I was about to say another one where it's
Rod. There.
Gemma, have you seen this film?
I have. I've not seen it for a very, very long time, though, but I do need to delve this out of the archives and get it into my eyeballs.
Just Peter Sellers, I'm telling you now, I want to see more of his stuff. This is the thing that I love about Skip to the End, and you see the listeners jump on board and then start buying the DVDs and the Blu-rays and watching it with us. This is one that, because of the 60s topic, I don't sit and watch many 60s films at home. I don't. It's just not really my thing. I prefer the 80s. You know this. But revisiting this now, I'm now absolutely besotted with Peter Sellers. And now I want to go and watch loads more of his films. And that's the best thing about this. I will now spend a few weeks just going into a world of films that I don't normally do. And I wouldn't unless I did this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too. Yeah, I've seen a few Peter Sellers films and I want to seek out more. There's also a kind of a biopic that was made of Peter Sellers' life starring Jeffrey Rush as Sellers that's meant to be really good.
Ooh.
And I haven't seen that yet, but I'm going to get a hold of that.
Ooh,
that's interesting.
Another thing to add to the list. But
indeed. The other thing that I want to mention in this film is the classic shot of Major Kong riding the nuclear bomb as it comes out of the bomb bay of the plane and then heading towards Russian land. And he's riding the bomb, waving his cowboy hat in the air. It's such a great scene. And it's one of those that is so great that it has, of course, been parodied on The Simpsons.
Yes.
Homer did it.
Yes.
Anything good gets parodied on The Simpsons, and that was.
I want us to be parodied by The Simpsons now, because I think we're there.
Well, they are putting out any old shit now, so I wouldn't put it past them, really. We're doing guest voices on the next episode. Yeah.
That's what it's getting really desperate. Series 28 featuring Mark, Ben and Gemma. Oh, God, no.
My turn. So I'm going to pick a film that is synonymous with one high-pitched violin note. And it's Psycho.
Oh, I've got it too.
Yeah,
oh,
wow. Yeah. What an iconic piece of work. By Alfred Hitchcock, of course, one of the most famous directors ever to be in cinematic history. And it's a glorious hybrid of a film. The first half focuses on Marion Crane, who steals a bit of bunce from her employer's mate. And then the second half really kicks in on her visit to the Bates Motel. We're introduced to Norman, who has a very strange connection with his mother. How good is this film? This film pretty much reinvented the entire horror genre, in my opinion, I think. And one of the most iconic scenes ever in cinematic history, the shower scene. And you mention, if The Simpsons did it, you know it's pretty bloody famous. The Simpsons have done this. Any old person has done this kind of homage to the scene. And the way how it was shot really changed the game for cinema, because you never see you never see the knife penetrate through Marion's body. You don't really see that much gore.
No.
It's just the suggestion of her being attacked with this frenzied knife going in and out of her. As it's all shot in black and white, you never see the colour of blood either. It is just a suggestion, but it still chills me to the bone. It's a terrifying film, but I think personally it is the finest work that Alfred Hitchcock ever had.
And there's a lot to choose from.
There is a lot to choose from.
I'd say this is definitely a flawless film, and when you ever talk to anyone about horror, anyone that's slightly a horror fan will use this as an example, up there with The Exorcist as one of the greatest horrors ever made. Mm. It's not over the top, it's not ridiculous. We've talked about how the way that they killed off the main character within the first sort of 20 minutes.
She was a big name at
Huge
the time.
Huge star, yeah.
I think you look up horror in the dictionary, there should be a picture of her with that whole shower scene. It's the most iconic horror scene of all time. This film is just absolutely awesome.
Mm-hmm. And you know it's good because Busta Rhymes used part of the score in Gimme Some More. That was released in 1998, and that is a barnstormer of a song.
That proves it. That proves how good that film was.
If Busta Rhymes says so, then I'm on board.
I also think you've got to think how much it's influenced horror as well. Every main sort of Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Nightmare on Elm Street, you can see all the nods to this film. It's been used. That's the good thing that we've already got covered in this topic with two choices. Mm-hmm. How much it's influenced and set up other good films in the future. Yeah. Amazing.
Speaking of things that it's set up in the future, have either of you watched the TV show Bates Motel?
Yes.
Yes.
Is it good? I've not seen it, and several people have said to me that it's really good in its own right.
I love it.
I really like it.
I think Vera Farmiga is just a tour de force into it.
Because I know that in the newest episode that's just been on in America, the Marion Crane character has just turned up, played by Rihanna, of all people.
Whoops.
Yeah. Oh, well. We sold it up to that point.
Yeah. But the reviews I read of the episode said she was good and the episode was good, and they've taken it in their own way. Mm-hmm. They've not directly copied the film.
They have, haven't they?
Yeah, completely. I've only watched series 1 and 2, so I think series 3 is out at the moment, so I've got to catch up.
Yeah, Freddie Highmore as Norman Bates is just magnificent.
Unbelievable.
I'll check that out.
Also, did you guys watch the remake?
No.
Sadly.
Oh, my God.
Shot for shot, wasn't it? Apart from Vince Vaughn wanking after watching Marion Crane take a shower.
I never knew I needed Vince Vaughn wanking in my life until that happened. And
it's surprising,
Why Gus Van Sant did a shot-for-shot remake, I'll never know. Because he's a good director, especially of indie films. He is a visionary guy. Use your vision, do something different, make it your own. Don't just do a shot-for-shot remake. It's pointless.
It was gash.
And Vince Vaughn. I can't take him seriously. He should just be in Wedding Crashers, that's it. That's the sort of thing. I don't want him to ever try and be a serious actor. He can't. It's like when Jack Black does it, or most of those... I'm sorry, but Adam Sandler. You are made for one purpose of a film. Just stick to what you know. Sorry, I'm going to lay into him now, but he's appalling.
That's fine.
And
that's
Ben,
fine.
I know you will never watch it, but he's fucking dreadful in it. Yeah. He really is. He is. I'm allowed to use that F word for that moment.
You are, because he really is.
We're 8 minutes in. We've done pretty well not to swear. This is the crossover topic. We're done.
It is,
next topic.
I guess it bounces onto me then, doesn't it? Because Mark's just had his second. And this is going to make this even quicker. On episode 63, we did our top three westerns of all time. one of those that I picked, I said, was one of my favourite films of all time. And it happens to be from 1966. And it is The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. There is no way in hell I could leave this out of my top 60s movies. I was weighing it up. I was thinking, do I want to put it in and have to talk about it again? But I'd be a liar. I'd be a fool if I hadn't put it in. So just to briefly give you an idea of what it's all about. It's Sergio Leone's classic spaghetti western about three men hunting down buried Confederate gold. We spoke at length on it on episode 63, so do go back and check out that episode to hear our whole talk. All you need to know is that it's a masterpiece of direction and arguably Clint Eastwood's best performance. It's peak Clint. It is what you think of when you think of Clint Eastwood, this film. Truthfully, I could have picked any of the three of Leone's Dollars trilogy. All three of them came out in the 60s within the space of, I think, 4 years. All three of them would be worthy additions. My whole top three, in fact, could have been the Dollars trilogy, but I thought that would have been rather dull. So I didn't do that. But
I've never seen all three.
The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. Have you not?
No.
Oh, no, me neither.
Do a weekend, just watch them all in a row.
That is one of those trilogies. That's what I need to do. I always do the Star Wars, I do Lord of the Rings, but that was a trilogy. That is what I need to do.
Let's get Clinted.
We should do it. On a serious note, I don't care if the listeners think this is boring. Us three should get together, drink whiskey, sit there, have some cigars, and just sit there in my cinema room and let's do this. Let's actually do this.
Can we do it in costume? Can we all wear like ponchos and cowboy boots and hats?
I'd be so down for that.
Can I wear a dress and just be like a cowgirl?
You could be the whore. The whore in Miss Kitty's burlesque house.
Do you know what? I'm up for it.
Well, there we go.
And we'll put some photos up on the social media. We'll make this happen. We'll give a competition prize. Yeah. They can come and watch.
They just have to sit quietly in a corner.
Yeah. No touching.
I knew, Ben. I knew a million times you'd add that in there.
Yeah,
I'm not going to spoil it because there's another film that I think one of you might mention we're going to have to discuss in a bit. But there's two films I knew would make this topic.
Yes.
Interesting.
I can't say it.
Well, let's move back around then to Gemma.
I'm going to go back to my childhood days, and it's Mary Poppins. You know what? I know that musicals is not your thing, and I totally respect that. But when looking at this topic, this was the first film that came up on the list where I thought, it just reminds me of good times growing up. Mary Poppins is, of course, the magical nanny that comes to the Banks house and whips them into shape with a song and a dance, as always. But for me, it was jumping into the chalk painting and going to the carousel and riding a horse and then joining the races and saving a little fox and singing supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. And I did pronounce that right. Thank
with
you very
brace.
Much.
With a well brace. Well done.
There we go. Give me an award, somebody.
The Colgate Award for
yes.
talking.
It just captured the magic and the imagination of being a kid. You wanted to do all these amazing things. You wanted to click your fingers and your room get tidy in a second. You wanted to have medicine that tasted like strawberry or rum punch, especially when you're a seven-year-old. And you wanted to hear Dick Van Dyke's atrocious attempt at being a Cockney.
Christ.
But he gets away with it because it's just charming, subtly charming. And I like how the relationship between Bert and Mary is purely platonic. It's not sexualized in any way, shape or form. That would probably be what the remake with Emily Blunt will be. She'll probably be banging Bert by about half an hour into the film or something.
It's going to be R-rated, I've heard that.
Totally.
Is that out soon?
Next year, I think.
Bloody hell.
Mary Poppins.
No need for that, Gemma.
Sorry, that's
degrading.
Which I hate.
Which I hate more than you. It offends me easily.
So yeah, just a fun show and I couldn't. It just reminds me of good times.
I'm going to surprise you, Gemma. I don't mind that film.
Yay!
As far as musical go, it's all right. And it is funny purely for Dick Van Dyke's core blimey governor.
Mary Poppins!
Oh, Christ.
If you like this film, just stick TV on at Christmas every fucking Christmas day or Boxing Day. I don't want to keep swearing, sorry. Every Christmas Day or Boxing Day.
Yeah. Any bank holiday, frankly, it's on.
Or I turn
Easter.
It off. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Does my head in a bit. The singing annoys me. The worst thing in the world is singing. It's not as in good singing from bands we like, but just annoying sort of musical singing gripes. It goes through my head. The worst thing on top of that is when kids are singing.
Oh,
I absolutely hate it. And a group of kids together, like Oliver, I just want them all to die.
Yeah.
Like the sound of kids in like, not in a choir even, just that annoying. Reminds me of performing arts days at school, which you wanted to not go because there's that annoying girl that would always try and be the lead role in it and all her friends. Oh, I hate it all.
This is all getting counselling. This is all
getting
very specific. Yeah. Clearly he's had an incident in his life.
Just pop him in a burlap sack and drown him.
I never got the role. Yeah. I wanted to be Annie. But no, I just hate the sound of kids' voice singing.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Sorry, Gemma, but it's a great choice.
Thank you.
I'm sure a lot of people are listening now going, yes, I agree.
Yes.
I'll follow this up with my final choice. This is very quick. Night of the Living Dead.
Oh,
George Romero.
Film.
What an unbelievable film this is. It's kind of like, and take this as I'm saying it, with not like a pinch of salt. It's like The Room and a horror movie together. It's not perfect. These people can't act. There's errors. It's very, very cheap. It feels like Clerks, low budget. These people aren't big actors, but it just works. It sets the whole genre up for the future of basically coming back alive and destroying the humanity and the whole human race. They are so well portrayed as these horrible zombies that we see now in Shaun of the Dead. We see it in
Zombieland
and the TV series that we gave a t-shirt for.
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead. I don't remember this, but that's where it all comes from. This is the actual blueprint for all of those future decent zombie films, and I think for the time, for the budget, for the lone unestablished actors, he pulls off something very, very special here.
And they're so clunky, they're so heavy-footed and clumsy, and you don't think anything that's moving at you about 0.5 miles an hour is going to be deathly dangerous, and they bloody are.
You've never got off a bus at Nuneaton, have you?
Clearly not.
Because I'm telling you now, they're all like that.
Game changer.
I'm not going to be that mean, but no, this film is brilliant. Ben, I don't know if you've seen it.
No, I have not.
Of course you haven't. It is one that if you ever did want to get involved in a bit more horror, this you know this, just the name itself, you know it sells itself. It's got to be one of the greatest horrors. It's in my top 10 horrors of all time.
I'm with you on there, buddy, definitely. And what a political statement at the end, with the main character being a black man. This was in a time where civil rights was really starting to kick off.
Yeah, even as far as, I don't know, last week, the black guy is usually the first person to die in American films, so that is quite surprising that some 40-odd years ago, whatever it was.
But sadly, he also does not make it at the end credits.
Oh. Donald Trump kills him.
Yeah.
The end.
Poaches him. Stuffs him on a wall.
Anyway, Ben.
I'm going to finish off with another film from 1966, one that I suspect neither of you may have seen, or maybe you will have, I don't know.
Oh,
I'm going with Fahrenheit 451.
No, I haven't.
It's a film directed by the French New Wave legend François Truffaut, and it was his only English language film. And it's based on Ray Bradbury's classic novel. It's about a dystopian future where literature is illegal. So the government employs a task force known as firemen, who go around finding people who have books and then burning the books. The irony, of course, is that the firemen are starting fires rather than putting out fires. And it's kind of an amalgamation of all kind of dystopian things. There's a lot of 1984 in there. And also the film Equilibrium, which I'm sure we've talked about before.
Unbelievable film.
Equilibrium is, to all intents and purposes, an absolute rip-off of Fahrenheit 451. It's definitely a film worth checking out. The film takes its name from the temperature at which paper supposedly burns, 451 degrees Fahrenheit. I love anything that's dystopian. I've realised this recently, that, you know, it's why I love things like Blade Runner. Any kind of dystopian future, you've got me. You've got me by the jaffers immediately. I'm sold on it. One of the interesting things about this is Truffaut really wanted to make everything resonate, so there are no written credits on this film. At the start of the film, you know, in the 60s, where often the credits would be at the beginning rather than the end, at the start of the film, the credits are spoken over some introductory video. You don't see any credits because literature is illegal, so he's going with that whole thing.
I like that.
Yeah, and it's a shame that Truffaut didn't have a good experience making this because he never made another English language film. You guys, or you, Mark, especially, will know Truffaut most of all as being the little French fella in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Yes.
That's him. That's because Spielberg managed to convince him to do an acting performance, but he was better known as a really classy director.
I'm learning so much on this episode.
I'm genuinely shocked.
Yeah.
He also did something brilliant as well. So Julie Christie plays the lead woman in it, but she actually plays two characters. She plays the main character, Montag. She plays his wife, who is kind of stuck in her ways. She does what the government tells her to. She wouldn't even think of reading a book. But then she also plays this young rebellious woman who Montag starts to follow, who wants to read books and go and live in a commune with people who understand the power of literature. And it was really clever using Julie Christie in both roles, because you see that it's two different sides of effectively the same coin. It was just a great idea and really well developed. You really need to check this film out.
Yeah, this
I really want to.
It's why other stuff hasn't done as much. Why have they not done that again with the credits even more? Because that's such a good idea.
So original.
And I didn't know that it burns at 400... What was it?
451.
I didn't know that.
Fahrenheit, apparently so, yeah.
I didn't know that's why it's called that either.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start fires tonight with my books. Let's have a go.
This sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's a really good film. If you like things like Equilibrium and 1984, you will absolutely like this film.
Does it look dated? Does it look really old and crappy?
It looks old, but not crappy. It's one of those where it's in the 60s, but set in a future. So it's what the people in the 60s thought the future would look like. So obviously it looks kind of laughable, but charming. It's charmingly retro.
I would like it to be like the Jetsons. That's what I've got in my head now. His boy,
but you respect it. It's not. You don't laugh at it thinking this just looks just ridiculous.
No, not at all. And because Truffaut was such a master of the form, it never looks anything less than brilliant.
I'm just going to watch it.
Yeah, let's do it.
So, Gemma, it's your topic.
Yep.
You've got to end on a high. There's been some good films here.
Let's do it. And I wonder if you guys have heard of this film. So my last choice is by a chap called Lindsay Anderson, and it's called If.
No.
If.
No.
Nope.
Okay. This is the on-screen debut of Malcolm McDowell.
Yeah.
Who is very famous for playing Alex in A Clockwork Orange, and this role was the reason why he did play Alex in A Clockwork Orange. So it's set in a private school, and you just follow a load of schoolboys sort of enjoying the term, but it shows the dark side of a private school. Obviously with practices of hazing, bullying, name-calling, you know, homophobia...
And soggy biscuit.
So, yeah, you know, the works. The works. And we follow a chap called Mick Travis, who is played by Malcolm McDowell. And it shows this slow build-up to a revolution. Him and two of his mates have pretty much had enough of the pushing around by these prefects. So it builds up to what they want to do, ultimately, against this form of cruelty to them. I'm not going to spoil the ending, because the ending is quite shocking. And I did not expect it to get to the level where it got to. But it's been widely regarded as a film that managed to capture the counterculture movement of the late 60s. So it's banded together with films like Easy Rider, Blow Up and Psych Out. Another interesting element of this film is it flicks from colour to black and white. And many people have said either A, they ran out of money, so they started shooting in black and white. Or B, it blurs the line between fantasy and reality. So you kind of make of it as you will when you watch it. But it's such a powerful film. It's absolutely fantastic. Really captures that late essence of the 60s, the whole rebellion, revolution. Go and watch it. It is fantastic.
Yeah, I'll check it out. I love Malcolm McDowell, especially his earlier stuff, so I'd definitely like to see that.
There's so much hints of Alex in there. Mm-hmm. So many hints. He ad-libbed quite a lot of his scenes as well.
That was the film I thought one of you were going to go.
Really?
Yes.
What, Clockwork Orange?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, not if.
I thought you mentioned Easy Rider there, Gemma. I thought one of us would absolutely have Easy Rider.
Me too.
I'm surprised that none of us did.
And no one had 2001.
No.
After we gushed about it, said it could make our top five.
Exactly. Shows you how strong that whole decade was then, doesn't it?
And it's just been an incredible experience this week, just watching those films that I would never, ever even think of watching.
It's been an absolute joy.
Yeah, and it makes me think I'm a bit ignorant. I put my hands up and say I should be delving into these films more often. Mm. Now I want to go and watch more Kubrick. I want to go and watch more Hitchcock, because I just am blown away by all these great films. And I just need to stop watching 80s films all the time. And the same thing, I do want to delve more into this.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's because of when we were born. We were born in the 80s. We were born into those great action films and kid-friendly films. And then we grew up with the silly daft films of the 90s and the CGI fest of the 2000s. We have to actively search out things that came before that because we weren't born into it. And sometimes you can just be too lazy and just not do it.
And I'm going to stop being lazy.
Yeah.
Come on then, what's social media giving us?
Okay, so I'm going to start with Ozzy the Pom at Ozzy_the_pom. Psycho, The Birds, and Goldfinger.
The Birds is amazing.
Birds is super.
It's no Birdemic.
That's true.
But it's a close second.
KC at Fallen Angel 2106 said Carry On Doctor.
Yeah, I like Carry On films.
Psycho and Jason and the Argonauts.
Jason and the Argonauts is so good. The Ray Harryhausen creature effects of the skeleton warriors and stuff are timeless, amazing.
And a game changer at the time as well.
Nearly 60 years old. Mm-hmm. Crazy.
Bloody hell. Wayne Moore at Wayne Moore said The Good, the Bad and the Ugly.
Yes.
Psycho. And one I thought maybe me or you, Mark, would have had Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, it's probably at fourth or fifth.
Yeah, I think it was knocking on the door at three. Charlie Bridgen at Movie Drone said 2001, The Wild Bunch, which is a great Western, and Mothra vs. Godzilla.
Oh, great film.
Unbelievable.
Eamon Griffin at Eamon Griffin said The Train, A Man for All Seasons, and Once Upon a Time in the West.
A Man for All Seasons is a really good film starring John Hurt, one of his best roles.
Never seen it.
No, me neither either. Roy Barrett at Roy1969THFC says The Hustler, The Great Escape and The Italian Job.
Oh, yeah. Classics, isn't it? The Great Escape.
And
wow.
The Italian Job.
Yep.
David Garrick at David J.R. Garrick said The Apartment, Cool Hand Luke and To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah.
Cool Hand Luke is up there. That is an absolute classic.
Although I just can't eat that many eggs.
Nice.
Very few people can.
Nice. No.
And then finally, Lee Johnson at Lethal Juice, which I think is the best handle name ever.
That is bloody good.
Can we give him a key ring or something for that?
Yeah.
That's unreal.
Yes, Lee. Psycho, The Jungle Book, and again, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, an absolute camp classic.
I've never seen it.
Oh, no, it's brilliant. Neither. It's maniacal.
The Jungle Book is 60s. Wow.
I know. We've learned something today.
The 60s are decent?
Yes.
Massively?
Yes. Yes to the 60s.
Awesome. So the next topic, it's Ben, is it?
It is me.
Yes.
It is me. So a little while back, maybe a couple of months ago, we had a listener question come through, and one of our great listeners wanted to know what our favourite bad films were. And we kind of put the kibosh on it. We said, no, we're going to hold off and use this as a topic. So have you guessed what my topic's going to be yet?
No, what is it, Ben?
So what I want us to do next time round is come back with our top three objectively bad films that we love. So those films that died on their arse at the box office or were absolutely slaughtered by the critics. Films that you can't really make a convincing case for them being good, but you like them anyway. Your top three best bad films.
This is incredible.
I love
bad films. Yes!
And do you, Mark, you might know, can you remember which listener it was that gave us that question?
It's K-O. So K-A-Y_O.
Oh, lovely.
I remember.
This one's for you, K-O. We've been to our local View cinema to see Ghost in the Shell, the American reimagining of the classic Japanese anime film. In the film, Scarlett Johansson plays the Major, a cybernetic human who works for a special ops team tasked with bringing down cyber terrorists, whilst also discovering the truth about her existence. Now, before we get into this, I want to know, Gemma and Mark, have you both seen the classic 1995 Japanese anime on which the majority of this film is based?
Yes.
I've seen it twice. I've seen it at uni, but I think I was really drunk. But I've also watched it again just before we went to the cinema, so it's completely fresh and I was sober and I wasn't high or anything like that. I was completely all up for it, so yeah. I've seen it, yes. Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time ever for me. I watched it a week before we went to see it. Very first time. Blew my tiny little mind.
Okay, now I'm a huge, huge fan of the 1995 anime. I've also read a little bit of the manga on which that was based, and I've seen both seasons of the spin-off TV show Standalone Complex. So I'm a bit of a Ghost in the Shell nerd, you might say. So what I want to try and do from the get-go is talk about this film in and of itself before we go down the route of comparing it to the previous works. Let's talk about this on its own. So I want to start with you, Gemma. What were your first thoughts coming out of the cinema the other day?
I really liked it. No, I'm joking. I didn't know. Dull, boring, lifeless, cheap, looked tacky. Mm-hmm. I was disappointed. And I think when watching the film, Scarlett Johansson did the best of what she was given. I thought this is a candidate for the worst film of 2017 for me.
Oh, big words, Mark.
I'm going to surprise you. I actually didn't mind it. Mm. And this is where I like the bit of conflict on the episode and things that we're not all on the same page. If I went to the cinema and I had never seen the original, I had never been a fan of manga or the anime, and I just watched this as a standalone film, I thought it looked beautiful. I thought I used to say it looked tacky. I didn't think it did. I thought it looked unbelievable. The guys at Weta and all these guys that do all the stuff for Lord of the Rings did a great job. But I completely think it's probably the worst script I've ever seen in a film, probably in 20 years.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson did okay with what she was given, but I'm expecting Ben now to rip this a whole new arsehole.
Well, you asked
and I'm tense.
Over to you.
It was a steaming pile of fucking horseshit. I came out of that cinema shaking with fury at how bad it was. In and of itself, it was terrible. But if you do then compare it to the earlier works, it's a fucking travesty. I was so furious. And the director, this Rupert Sanders prick, is a complete hack who makes beautiful garbage. He made this and he made the last Snow White and the Huntsman or some shit. Beautiful garbage is all he can do. He shouldn't have been allowed anywhere near this because he's shat all over it. It's a disgrace. Grace.
But you did say
but how do you really
but you did
feel?
Just say he makes things look beautiful.
Beautiful, yes. Intriguingly beautiful, but I didn't think they look. I agree with Gemma, I thought the cityscapes looked tacky. Mm-hmm. They tried to go for a kind of Blade Runner-type-esque cityscape.
Very Blade Runner.
But that looked industrial and real. It looked tactile. It looked like you could reach out your hand and touch what was going on in Blade Runner, whereas this looked like you'd just be putting your hand into a massive CGI. None of it looked real. None of it looked like anything you could touch or smell or in any way experience. It was just, it looked like a shit PlayStation game to me.
PlayStation 1?
I'd go as far as maybe PlayStation 3.
Nice.
It looked like a shit PlayStation game. It didn't look real. It didn't look lived in or believable in any way. I thought it was absolute fucking bollocks.
So, score it?
Moving swiftly on.
I'm going to give it a bit of slack. I think it did look good. I don't know. I'm not so attached to the original that I went in there and I saw these. Yes, I completely agree. It doesn't look like Blade Runner where it's physically, you can touch it and you can see it. But I didn't think it looked bad. I thought some of the cinematography, I thought the art design, the colours, I thought all the costumes, I thought the sets, I thought they looked really good. I think the production team have done a fucking awesome job of this, but the film itself had no substance. It had no soul at all.
It was a shell without a ghost.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Just shell and... Do you want to watch a film called Shell?
If it's the Turtles pre-kind of coming of age,
yes.
That would be unreal.
Should we make that happen?
But, you know, I think you just said then Scarlett Johansson carried it and did the best she could, but I didn't really get blown away by her in this. I'm a massive, massive fan of her. Yeah. I love her as Black Widow. I even love her in stuff like We Bought a Zoo. I think she can do the serious acting roles really well as well. In this, she didn't do much for me, I'll be honest. I just didn't really buy into her.
No, me neither. I think Gemma's right. She did the best with what she was given. And as you mentioned, Mark, the script was terrible. We'll talk about that in a second. But I get that she was trying to put forth a kind of robotic performance because she is meant to be a cyborg. I get the logic of that. But she didn't seem robotic to me. She seemed comatose.
Yeah.
I just wanted to wake her up. Say, look, listen, love, there's a camera on you. Do something. It was so boring. And I love Scarlett Johansson. I'm a Scarlett Johansson fanboy, but I just thought this was abysmal.
You can't polish a turd sometimes, no, chaps. No. You really can't. And why can't we have a movie about Black Widow? Because she's got the talent, she's got the capabilities, but in this role, she just couldn't connect the dots. But then again, when you're given that kind of script, what can you connect?
And as you've said, Mark, the script was bad. And the worst thing for me was that it was predictable. Everything someone said, you knew the next line. So there's a bit where the Major, her character, goes to visit this old woman, and they're talking about this old woman's missing daughter. And in my head, I went to myself, she's going to say, you remind me of her. And then bang, next word out of her mouth, next line was, you remind me of her. There was another example where the Major, goes to this kind of hovel where she used to live as a kid, and she's with this character called Kuze, and she's saying about how when they were there as kids, they had nothing. And then in my head, I said, what she's going to say next is, but we had each other. Boom, next line, but we had each other. It was so predictable. Just garbage, absolute shit. It felt like a first draft that no one then bothered to do a second, third pass on and make it shootable. It was atrocious.
Can we talk about Kuzo for a second? Yeah. Because he just reminded me, if Tommy Wiseau was ever inspired by Stephen Hawking.
Gemma, right, you are not going to believe me, so I'm going to have to show you. I've literally written a note here. Michael Pitt, who plays Kuzo, Michael Pitt is terrible, and his Kuzo sounds like a cross between Tommy Wiseau and Stephen Hawking. I've literally written that, and I'm showing Gemma now.
This is mind-blowing. You two are far too... We're spending too much time together.
In sync.
But are you saying that in a bad way of Tommy Wiseau?
I think Tommy Wiseau would have done a better job. This guy was just ridiculous. I thought he was a piss poor casting choice. He was just a joke. It was laughable.
And the villain was boring. The Kuze villain was tedious. And the villain Kuze comes from the standalone Complex TV series. He's from the second season. But they've taken the name and none of the charm or thorough backstory of the character. They've taken a couple of little bits here and there. And they've tried to make their own thing. And it just didn't work at all. Dull.
I don't think you'll be watching this ever again.
No.
Was there anything about this film you enjoyed that you actually thought, that's good?
I liked Pilo Asbeck as Bato. Yep. I thought he was quite good. He brought that character from the manga and the anime to life, but he did it in his own way. He's an actor I like. I've seen him in things like Game of Thrones, and I like that guy anyway. I enjoyed him. But generally speaking, Mark, no. It was a disaster of epic proportions to me.
I liked the end credits because I knew the film was over. And it was like, yay!
That's literally the only thing you're clinging on to is the end
That's
credits.
That's right. I think the music sounded very similar to the original Ghost in the Shell film, mm-hmm. but I wasn't too sure if it was an identical copy of it. But yeah, I really enjoyed the end credits.
They did copy a lot of things directly from the 95 film. So the bit right at the start of the film where the Major dives off the rooftop, that's taken from the film. There's a bit where she has a fight with this guy in some shallow water.
That's right.
That's taken from the 95 film. Mm-hmm. And I get why they did that. It was lip service to the fans. But then they didn't take any of the heart or the meaning. Mm-hmm. They just took the shallow shit, the visuals. That's all they tried to take. It's because Rupert Sanders, as I've said, is a fucking hack.
He was the one that had a thing with Kirsten Stewart as well.
He did. He had an affair with her when he was married, yeah.
And this is the price he pays.
There are a lot of things that annoyed me. Another thing that annoyed me is right at the start of the film, on the screen, there was an on-screen crawl of writing telling you what had gone on and how this sort of cybernetic world exists. Then the next scene is showing one of these cybernetic creatures, the Major, being made. So why tell us in writing what you're then going to show us visually? And it just smacks of studio interference to me. That's the studio saying, no, we need to put some opening writing on here so that people get what this is all about. And it was ridiculous. It was redundant because we saw it happen 10 seconds later.
I like the voice of the studio there.
Thank you.
That was
my default mogul voice.
Thank God, it'll make millions.
I want to put that kid in the pictures. He's a star.
I like you, see? Cha-cha-cha-cha-cha.
There's nothing about this film, then, that you actually like. You've literally just ripped it like I thought you would. But your expectations going in, were they high? Were they low?
They were actually quite low. I didn't expect it to be as good as the source material, but I just wanted it to be good in its own right. And even on that modest level, it let me down. And the thing that I couldn't help but shift, watching it and thinking about this hack director, Sanders, I kept thinking, what would happen if a director, a visionary director with an eye for dark material, would have had this? Imagine Darren Aronofsky's Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, my God.
I watched the shit out of that.
And you wouldn't be ranting like this.
I would not.
Mm-mm. What does everybody think about the controversy attached to this film with whitewashing? So I'd like to hear what you guys think.
I was surprised by the lack of different cultures and races in this film. Yeah. I need to be quite well worded here. And you could definitely see that the response that social media has had, where they're saying this is disgusting, they're not casting Japanese or Chinese people or anyone from the right ethnicity for this role. And I felt that when I went in, it was kind of like, where's Wally looking for the sort of...
anyone not white.
Yes, that's the quite way of saying this. Yeah. And I felt it was quite offensive to the people that have definitely put their heart and soul into this in the original film. So why change it? Why it wasn't too Americanized. It wasn't like they had USA flags and they had all the proper...
Well, it was set in Japan. Yeah. So yeah, there's no reason why the characters weren't Japanese. I think, generally speaking, people get up in arms over the whitewashing thing too easily. They often take it as a calculated insult against people of a certain race, when in fact it's usually just a commercial decision. There aren't really any big name Asian American actresses. And that's the fault of Hollywood. Hollywood needs to create those actresses, certainly. It's going to make more money if you put Scarlett Johansson in it and she happens to be white. It's a commercial decision. But I did think they tried to have their cake and eat it. When the film was in production, they were saying, look, we're not trying to offend anyone. It just so happens that our interpretation of this character is white. Okay, fair enough. But then in the film, we find out that the cybernetic body she has is white, but she was in fact a little Japanese girl. So what I mentioned earlier, she goes to see this old woman, you remind me of my daughter. It's because she was her daughter, she was a little Japanese girl. And I think the filmmakers are putting that in to kind of say, oh look, we have recognised she was Japanese, but we've made her white anyway. Which is worse!
Yeah.
If you'd have just said, oh, we've chosen for her to be white, fair enough. But you said she was Japanese, but then we whited her up a bit. That's worse, that's more insulting. That is ludicrous to me.
It's like you've cast a female Michael Jackson.
It really
not
is.
Not Michaela Jackson.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Well, we wanted him to be a black little boy, but we made him a black, white adult that touches kids. You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Allegedly.
But you know, he's dead. He's not going to sue us.
His family might, though. They're very litigious. Allegedly.
We'll get out of that one. So, yes, Gemma, the answer is I felt it was quite disrespectful.
Yeah, I think they kind of made a bit of a cop-out with having the Shells as these generic people, like what Ben kind of commented on. So, yeah. I agree with
that. What's his name from The Dark Knight that's in it?
Oh, Chin Han, I think his name is. Yeah, he played Togusa.
I really like that guy, and I like seeing him cropping up in more and more films. I think that, you know, if there's anything good in the film, I always believe in him. I do believe him as an actor, and he's not a very well-known name. That's the fact I didn't even know it, and I couldn't even pronounce it. But the fact is, I thought he was quite good.
He was quite good. And you asked me just now if there was anything in this film that I liked, and there was. It was his haircut. Because in the original source material, Togusa has always had a mullet, and they kept the mullet. So there you go, tick. That'll get a point from me.
Wow, so it's not going to be his duck egg.
No, it's not going to be a zero because of the mullet.
Scarlett Johansson's suit, I thought that looked pretty cool.
Only because it was skin tight, Mark. I know what you were thinking. I saw you had the conveniently placed popcorn on your lap.
I do love her. We'd had this conversation on the way home, and it isn't like a, oh, I'd love to nail her. It was more of a, the conversation was that she is actually just stunning, but not in a make it up fake way. I remember your rant a couple of weeks ago about the Kardashians. Mm. She's just naturally beautiful, and there's just... She just love her. She's the girl next door. She's just a beautiful, beautiful future wife. And just, I just think, you know.
My future wife.
Do you not think?
Yeah, she's natural. And natural beauty rules all.
And she's wasted this.
She has it, which is a real shame.
Shame. Are you ready to score it? Have you got any more rants?
I'm spent.
Are you sure? Yeah. You did go all out at the start. It was quite cooling down.
I used to rant all the time. I know.
I wanted Gemma to start waving you with like a big feather.
Which she carries with her at all times,
yeah,
I'm sure.
We all
my
do.
Feather pocket.
Gemma, you go first. Come on.
Worst film of 2017. I've seen better special effects on Microsoft Paint. And for that reason, I'm going to give it a 3.
That's bloody low.
It bored me.
I'm going to double that and go 6 because I think it looked good. I really did think it looked beautiful. Mm. I think the visuals were superb, and I think if it comes out on 3D Blu-ray, it's going to look great. Some of those scenes and some of the sort of CGI I think will really work, and I think that's a 3's harsh. But Ben...
Togus's mullet, 1.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson in a skin-tight bodysuit, 2. And if this film, as bad as it is, brings anyone to the original films, the anime, the manga, then that's worth a point as well. So 3 out of 10 for me.
So would you agree a 4 would be fair? 2 threes and a 6, that's pretty fair.
I'd agree a 3 would be fair. but yes, I suppose we'd by our own rules, then yes, 4. So Ghost in the Shell, 4 out of 10.
It's now time to reveal the winners from the last competition. it is also time to announce a new competition for this episode.
Hold on.
What's going on?
Something's gone wrong.
Stop.
It's competition time! Yeah! That's more like it.
There we go. We need to film this just to see how much heart and soul. That is what Ghost in the Shell is missing. That oomph and heart and passion just on a little segment of the podcast.
Or UB Major.
Why not?
Wouldn't want to see you in the skin tight bodysuit, pal.
I'm getting you drunk, baby, and you're going to see it all. If you'd listened to our last episode, we gave away some unbelievable prizes. So let's refresh our memories. We had a Kong Skull Island bundle, which consisted of a t-shirt, a hat, some dog tags, a journal, and a jacket. A really cool jacket. And the question we put out there to win this was, what was the character called played by Brie Larson? Now, Ben, you won't know this because you blinked and missed Brie Larson in that film. Do you know this?
I do. It was Mason Weaver.
It was. And that's going to go to Thomas Wright on Facebook, who got that correct. Well done. Our good friend Howie at Richer Sounds, who's going to be coming up with some more goods this week, you know.
Ooh.
He gave us two pairs of, this is a hard one to me to remember, Sound Magic ES18s. So there's some really shit-hot, nice headphones to listen to our podcast on.
Cool.
If you want us to sound even better, you know, these are the sort of headphones you want to listen to. Really simple one. What was the score that we gave Life of Brian?
9?
Exactly. Ben, you can have one of those, you know what?
Oh, cheers.
But also, we're going to give some to Mike Simpson and Gemma Buckley. And Gemma, if you're related to Jeff Buckley and you've got any signed stuff, please let me know. We also had a Logan t-shirt from our good friends at Dark Bunny Tees. You know, they are... bloody good friends. They
we
give us a lot
them.
Of good stuff.
We love them a lot.
What rating did we actually give Logan?
We gave it a 9.
We did. Highest rated new film by us so far. That's big. And that's going out to Anna Beffley. Unbelievable prize. You've seen that with the Logan's limousines print.
Yeah, it's cool.
It's really cool.
And the very final prize, God, we're giving away too much, guys, was the Skip to the End final printed t-shirt. The Skip to the End in the Stranger Things font.
Yeah.
All you had to do was leave us an iTunes rating. So let's pick it out the hat. The winner is Sunny D. Anzi, who left us a 5-star iTunes rating. So you'll be getting that in the post.
That's fantastic. They have gone like hotcakes, haven't they? So much so that I didn't even get one.
No,
shame.
Yeah, it is shame, isn't it, really? Because I know you've got one.
Well, I actually had to give mine away.
Oh, yeah.
So keep your eyes peeled on any future movies coming out, because you never know. I'm not going to ruin it, but someone in the film might be wearing it.
Mm-hmm.
The next competitions we're going to be launching, let's give 3 prizes away this time. To celebrate Ghost in the Shell, we've got a Blu-ray box set, which doesn't include the new film. That's all right, okay? So you get the animated series, and you also get the standalone film.
Okay.
All you have to do is tell us, what rating did we just give it on this episode? That's fair.
Yeah.
And that will go out to one lucky winner. Our good friends at Last Exit to Nowhere have given us a couple of their brand new designs. So first of all, we've got the Warriors t-shirt.
Oh,
lovely.
That's pretty sweet. And we've also got a brand new Blade Runner t-shirt.
I like that a lot.
Look
at his eyes.
That's sexy. Dilated right now.
Right then, for Warriors, let's make it a bit more interesting. What year was Warriors released? Let's make it a bit more, you know, not so easy.
Mm-hmm.
And for Blade Runner, what is the sequel to Blade Runner called that's out later this year? The official title. And we'll pick a winner for each of those. So thanks to Last Exit to Nowhere. Our good friend Howie from Richer Sounds has given us some bunts. Oh. And we've spent it well.
Yeah.
We've got 50 Skip to the End official keyrings. And I'm not just saying this, and Ben will back me up, because this is before your time. We've given away stuff like a spa weekend, a iWatch,
a TV projector.
Yeah. For some reason, when we gave away... a keyring, they were the most popular tweeted, Instagram liked, Facebook liked picture we've ever done.
People bloody love the keyrings.
So we've got 50 of them.
Yeah.
Wow.
What I want to do is honour basically anyone that's given us a 5-star rating on iTunes. So what we're going to do, and it's not going to be announced on the next episode, I'm going to keep going on Twitter and Facebook. If you leave us an iTunes rating over the next 2 weeks, you'll get straight into this. But all the people that have already given us iTunes ratings will also be put into this.
Mm-hmm.
And each day I'm going to keep picking names out, tweeting them out, Facebooking them out, and you'll be getting one of these keyrings in the post.
That'll be a fun daily trip to the post office for you. Then.
I might do them in lumps of like 10 every sort of 5-6 days, you know what I mean? Not do it all in one. I haven't told you yet, that's your duty.
Screw that.
So thank you to all of those people. Like I said, really, really appreciate Last Exit to Nowhere and Howie from Richer Sounds. So go on Richer Sounds as well to their Twitter page at Richer Sounds, because he said any more likes will give us more prizes on the next episode.
He's a good chap, isn't he?
He's unbelievable. and we're going to announce the winners of all these competitions in 2 weeks' time.
It's that time again. It's movie masturbate time. On the last episode, we picked out from the pot Ben Stiller. So what us three are going to be doing is discussing our favourite performance that he's done. So, I think we're going to kick things off with Ben. Ben for Ben.
Can I trouble you for a warm glass of milk?
You can trouble me for a warm glass of shut the hell up. Now you will go to sleep or I will put you to sleep. You're in my world now, Grandma.
It's mine as well.
I bet as well.
So we've all gone for the orderly from Happy Gilmore.
Yeah, of course we have. It was a no-brainer for me.
He's not even credited in the IMDb for this. I had to try and find out what his actual name was.
Yeah,
but,
Hal,
oh, he's just orderly,
I got Hal L.
Well, that was brief.
Well, there we go.
I honestly didn't think you two would have that. I thought one of you would have, like, Dodgeball, another one would have Walter Mitty or some shit. I didn't expect you all to have Hal the orderly. He's in, I think, three scenes.
Yeah.
You just pulled landscaping duty.
Are they not the greatest three scenes I've ever, though? Yeah.
And the finest handlebar moustache and coiffed fringe as well. It's just beautiful.
I love that kind of... When he's putting his nicey-nice voice on, it's kind of like a high-pitched kind of... Oh, are you okay? Yeah. And then he goes, you will go to sleep. All right, we'll put you to sleep.
We're going to look after this sweet young lady for you. Genius.
I wish I picked something else now, because the listeners are like, oh, okay, is that it? He hasn't got a very big part in this film at all, but it just is amazing. It's just those
so
lines.
Funny.
That quote then is just... gold.
It is. It's just about... He does quirky characters superbly. He's also done a cameo in Freaks and Geeks towards the back end of the first series. He's like a CIA agent, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Who has like a mini breakdown towards the end of the episode. And I think this is towards Stiller's credit. He does short... two-dimensional characters so well.
Yeah, and another example of that is Anchorman, when he turns up as the Spanish language
That's
news presenter in the news brawl.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, that's his strength.
Yeah. Here we go then, because this has been so brief. Off the top of your head, what would have been your second choice? I would go with White Goodman from Dodgeball.
That would be my second choice as well. Sorry to sound like a copycat. It really would.
Mine would be Ted from Something About Mary.
That would
Fair
be my
enough.
Third.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I quite like him in that.
He is good in that. It's nice to see a bit of a serious side, but come on, hell all day, every day.
Do you want to hear what the social media said?
Yeah.
So, oh God, I've noticed that a few people are tweeting in saying, oh my God, I got shouted out on Skip the End, but Mark completely got my name wrong.
I think I saw the word butchered my name somewhere online.
So we've got M. Bobsky, which is at M. Bobsky. It might be, it might not be. Dodgeball. Keith Bloomfield, which is at hardluck_hotel. Walter Mitty.
I thought that was okay.
That
not great.
Came through a lot on social media, and I'll put my hands up and say I've never seen it.
I thought it was okay. Kristen Wiig was better in it than Stiller was.
Yeah? Worth watching?
I'd give it a watch.
Why are you saying, you haven't seen it?
Yeah, but...
You're not
going to
bother.
It just doesn't appeal to me, I'm afraid. I'm really sorry.
There's more on the list that takes priority.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what it was. It was a very crass attempt at an Oscar bait film from Stiller. I think it was him angling for his first Oscar nomination, and it wasn't quite there.
It made me think it was just like, Ben Stiller is Forrest Gump. It just felt like that from just the poster.
I'd probably want to watch that now.
Matthew Butler, which is at @TizWasBunnyBoy, Heartbreak Kid.
That film's rubbish.
I've not seen it at all.
No, neither have I.
Kevin on Twitter has put Mystery Man.
Brilliant film. So underrated.
That is one of the most underrated films of all time. Have you seen it?
I still haven't, but it looks...
Do you watch any films? I mean, I'm not having a dig here, but you don't watch
anything.
There's
like two films I said no to. The rest have gone, I've seen that. So, yeah.
Okay, have you seen this? Rob_Dam has said Next of Kin.
What's next
See what
kin?
I mean? Rubbish.
What?
No commitment.
One of my favourite films, that. I know it's one of yours as well, Mark.
I just... What cut do you like the best? Directors.
Directors,
yeah.
Always.
Movies now and then have put Reality Bites.
Yes, I have seen that.
Oh.
I like that
it's
film.
It's a great film. Mm.
And finally, which I thought might just make it from you, Ben, Podcast with No Aim, Tropic Thunder.
He is brilliant in that. But again, it's Robert Downey Jr.'s
yes.
film.
Yes.
It is, completely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a film where he took the effort, the effort to make himself black. You know?
Yeah.
So
I don't think it was quite the same thing
no.
as Ghost in the Shell, really, Mark, but I see what you're coming for.
I've got a stiffy.
Brilliant.
And I want to masturbate.
Is it my turn? I don't think I've pulled out in a while. That's what he said.
Come on then, Ben.
All right, here we go. Drum roll, please.
Drumman sound amazing with these mics.
Yeah.
I don't know.
In 2 weeks' time, we're going to be mass debating over Johnny Depp.
Oh!
And talking about him.
Beautiful, naked, big-titted women just don't fall out of the sky, you know?
It's now time for the rewatch. If you're a new listener, we basically choose a classic film that we like to digest and revisit. So it's now time for Dogma, the Kevin Smith masterpiece. You're not allowed to laugh. Come on, give me this moment.
All right.
Basically, the film tells the story of an abortion clinic worker. Not an abortion clinic, that'd be a dark film. Worker who has a special heritage. And it's down to her and a group of people to stop two fallen angels returning back to heaven via a loophole that they found. Are you okay with that?
Yeah, that's fine.
Because you'll go into it and start telling more, and I usually just pass it to Ben. Pass the buck, and he'll go into it in a lot more detail. This film came after the success of Clerks, Morat's, Chase and Amy, but you got the budget this time. You got a really big difference to the sort of very cheap, low-budget Clerks and Morat's. Mm-hmm. You really did.
And the stars.
Massive stars. So you've got a lot of good actors here. You've got Jason Mewes. You've got Kevin Smith. You've got, well, we'll go into it. You've got people like Ben Affleck, Matt Damon. There's a lot of good actors. But this is my moment to really gush over this film. I think it's an absolute great film. But I knew that Ben was on the fence with Kevin Smith. Sometimes
no. When have I ever been on the fence about Kevin Smith?
Ben is not a huge fan, but I know that this film is a film that you must have respect for because it's one of his, it's his finest piece of work. Gemma, I don't have any idea what you think of Kevin Smith, to be honest, or what you think of this film. So this is a good, I'm excited. I'm more excited about this than Ghost in the Shell or The Game Show or anything else. But I am going to throw it to Ben because I really want to get a really honest, and the listeners are probably sitting there going, oh my God, this is it. What's he going to say? What do you think of Kevin Smith's Dogma?
So as we mentioned earlier, it is a film that historically I've always said I liked. But I realised the other day that I hadn't actually seen it since it came out. I think I saw it when it came out and then probably saw it on video. I rented it from Blockbuster 6 months later when it came out. But both of those viewings were in my teens and I'm now in my mid-30s. So the question really when I put it on the other day was, will the film hold up? Will I enjoy it as much as I did then? And the answer is yes. It really is as good as I remember it being. First of all, it's just a brilliant idea. It's a brilliant concept for a film that Smith's come up with here. The fact that these two fallen angels who've been left to live in, I think, in Ohio or somewhere like that, they're stuck living there, and they come up with a loophole in Catholic dogma that says if they can get some way back into heaven, they have then, you know, they can restore their, you know, whatever it was. But they can only do this because some church is having some special ceremony that allows people to get rid of all their sins when they walk through the doors. But walking through the doors would send them back to heaven, but it would also prove the fallibility of God, which would end the world. It's just a great idea. And not being a Catholic and not knowing much about Catholic dogma, I don't know if any of these things are written in the scriptures. I've no idea, and I don't really care. But either way, they just work as an idea, as a basis for a film. They work like gangbusters.
Amazing. Can we score it?
You're so happy.
I've worked with this guy on this podcast for 2.5 years. Nearly every episode we get a bit of abuse for Kevin Smith. Mm-hmm. This is different. Gemma.
It's a thumbs up, finger point, buddy Christ for me.
Nice.
It's fun. It's enjoyable. It's a film that doesn't take itself seriously. Right down to the opening credits, I suppose. It kind of says, you know, this is not, you know, light for light religion. It's, you know, it's nothing to kind of take to heart. It's just fun. It's a clever film. It's a sharp script. Great performances by all of the cast. Really, really enjoyable.
I want to go straight in with the cast because I forgot, and it sounds awful, but I forgot that Alan Rickman has such a big part in this film. I know he's in it. Obviously, he's on the poster. He's in the centre. I miss Alan Rickman.
Me too.
I miss him for Die Hard, but I now miss him a lot for Dogma. I think the performance he gives in this is just unbelievable because he looks effortless. He doesn't look like he's really trying, but he's just being the best Alan Rickman he can.
The thing I love about Alan Rickman is there was no actor, and there is no actor, that can play weary sarcasm as well as him. He is just the king of it. So you'll see Dogma, you'll see it in Galaxy Quest, you'll hear it as well in the voice role he plays in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that weary, sarcastic role. He nailed it. He was all him. And he's brilliant in this.
I miss him so much. He's perfect as Megatron. From the time when you see him standing in the middle of a river when Bethany's having a breakdown, to the very first time we see him, Ken doll parts and all. He's such a wonderful factor to this film, and almost like a guide. You're there with him, with Bethany. He's there to hold your hand and take you to a great little place that does great tequila down the road. He's wonderful, and he is sorely missed.
Ben Affleck is in full-on smug Affleck mode, which he spent most of the 90s in, didn't he? We've discussed this before.
The dick knob dial is up.
All the way up to 11, yeah. But he was fantastic, and as was Damon. In fact, I think Damon is as good in this as I've ever seen him in anything, even though this is a kind of a daft, quirky comedy. Damon is so strong in this, so believable.
The great two chemistry. Of them, just the I love it. Is it even just the? It's so depressing because Kevin Smith now isn't releasing these sort of films, but seeing those stars as big as they were in the 90s and the 2000s, mm-hmm. put their pen to paper and be in a film like this, which is very controversial. A lot of people kicked off about this, especially the churches. They went absolutely mental. Oh, you're taking the piss, you're completely ripping our religion. You're not being fair. But to put them in these wings and over the top, really, like you said, Ben, it's the most cocky arrogance, which I like of Affleck. I miss that sometimes. Yeah, yeah. I like the smugness. And he's the same in Chase and Amy. He's very much the same in Morats. He's this really arrogant. You want to spit on him.
A douchebag.
Douchebag is perfect, but I think he's brilliant. Absolutely unbelievable.
Weirdly enough, I even like Jay and Silent Bob in this.
I love them. Yes.
They're fantastic, and I find them utterly insufferable in everything else, but I like them a lot in this.
They're really enjoyable in this.
I'm glad you praise them, because obviously the start of this episode had our good friend Jay Muse introduce it, so it's a good job you didn't just spend the next...
All clicks together,
But Jake is a good performance. He's likeable. He's that stupid douchebag that is the annoying sort of best mate of Kevin Smith, obviously, that's why he's in this film. But then he is that character of the voice for them both. And you can see sometimes with just Kevin's expressions and his face of, I don't agree. But he doesn't speak in the whole film again until the very end, which is great.
He speaks twice, two different things. Yeah. When he kicks the person off the train.
Oh, yeah.
No ticket.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I like that. And I think it does work. I know it's a bit of a gimmick. And after six or seven films, you get fed up with it. That it, when he does talk, it's something major. Mm. But in this film, I think Kevin Smith's facial expressions of seeing how he's reacting to stuff and he's loving it.
Brilliant. What do we think to Linda Fiorentino as the main role? Because she's barely done anything. Since she was in this and she was in Men in Black at around the same sort of time, and then she just kind of disappeared.
She's great in this. She's the heart of this film. Mm. You're there with her every step of the way, and I love that kind of, if you were her, you would react in the exact same way, going, what the fuck is going on? Who the fuck are you? She's wonderful in this, a real delight, perfectly cast in this. She's just a warm character. You want to see her save the world, and even when she is in those moments of weaknesses where she just simply cannot continue, she feels so much weight on her shoulders. She's just wonderful in this. She's great.
Now, I'm interested, Mark, because you've been to see Kevin Smith's like one-man shows and things, haven't you?
Yeah.
And you've read various books about him and all that kind of stuff. Has he ever talked about his experience of working with Linda Fiorentino? Because I know people who work with her on Men in Black have talked about her and said that she was an absolute fucking nightmare to work with. And that's what makes me think she's not done much since. So I don't know if you've ever heard anything that about Dogma.
I've literally been to all of his UK shows, got all of his books, and I don't think he's ever talked about it. And that must be the reason why she's not around now, because she must be that annoying that people don't want to hire her.
Could be, yeah.
But you just saying that, I mean, I've not been on IMDb and looked, but she didn't do anything wrong in this film, and she's a fucking good actress, and she leads the film very well against people like Alan Rickman, against bloody
Chris
Ben
Rock,
Affleck.
Jason Lee.
Chris Rock.
Refresh.
But yeah, I want to see more of her, and I don't know why she went away.
I also like her because she kept up with Jason Mewes and Kevin Smith during the scenes where she is with Jane Silent Bob. She held her own. She was great to kind of keep up with that kind of quickfire rapport that Jason Mewes has with his script.
And you know that when Jason does turn up on set, he is Jay the whole time he's there. He doesn't ever switch out. That is him. They write this film because he is that person. All these sayings of Snoochie Boochie, Schnoogans, all that stuff is him.
Utter nonsense.
I did like it when he praised the fact that they were pro-choice. They didn't care that she worked for an abortion. They said women's bodies are their own rights, so what are we to judge?
Yes,
that was a real punch in the air moment. Like, yes, fucking Jane Silent Bob are feminists.
Kevin Smith, in my opinion, at best, is a serviceable director. Not a good director, he's a serviceable director. But at his best, he's a hell of a writer. And I think this is the best thing he's written. Top to bottom, I think the script for this is magnificent. Mm-hmm. And I just wish he'd do more like this.
I think it was because, and it's not being harsh, and if he was listening right now, he wouldn't be offended by this. He does a lot of weed now. We see him come up with stuff like Tusk and yoga hoses. And, you know, to be honest, Ben, I know you've not seen Jay. Have you seen Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back? Or
I don't think so.
No, or Clerks 2. He's still got that wit and that intelligence to write funny jokes, but he just doesn't bother now. He just writes silly stuff that he thinks is funny when he's stoned with his mates. This isn't a comedy. Dogma, is it? It's not an overall comedy. It's funny, but it's got some serious sort of elements of satire in it.
Yeah, and some heavy ideas.
Very heavy, and I think it's very intelligent.
One of the best scenes in the film is the movie The Golden Calf scene, where Loki and Bartleby confront the executive producers. Mm-hmm. That scene is perfection. The way how that was written, again, it shows Smith's very clever way of exposing a truth with still a dark sense of humour. Flawless scene.
And I think he should concentrate more on the writing and less on the directing. So an example of why I think he's not a great director is the fight scene that takes place on the train is one of the worst, most poorly shot and choreographed fight scenes I've ever seen. It was like two teenagers having a slap fight over a bag of Conkers. It was appallingly bad. And I wish he'd just step back and say, oh, maybe I should just write more stuff for other people, people who actually have that talent. I'll use my skill and let them use theirs.
Yeah, and, you know, stick to TV. Stick to doing The Flash and stuff like that when he gets involved and gets a good team behind him. We haven't even talked about George Carlin.
Oh, amazing. God.
One of Ben's absolute idols. Mm-hmm.
Again, missed.
Yeah, the idea of casting the known, famous atheist George Carlin as a Catholic priest?
Cardinal Glick. Yeah, he's just unbelievable. And you can see that Kevin Smith has a lot of love and respect for him. On set, you see a lot of their photos, and he looked at him like a dad figure, I think. They were literally that close. To put him in this role, I straight away, you just laugh in my ass off. As soon as he's given a speech and being serious with his little religious robe on, I just absolutely love this guy.
Yeah. And unveiling Buddy Christ as well.
And we also haven't mentioned Salma Hayek, who plays Serendipity.
Yeah.
What an entrance. That dance scene reminds me a bit of From Dusk Till Dawn.
Me too, I thought the same thing. Yeah.
And you just think, that body is unbelievable. But what a beautiful character. And again, she's up there with Jay when they're giving her abuse and talking really filthy at her. She gives it herself and she's going along with them. And you're not thinking, I wonder if she was uncomfortable about this. Because it's not the sort of role she would normally do. So when you're seeing Jay effing and blighting at her, she's giving it some good welly back.
Mm-hmm. She kept it up. And the script. She wouldn't have
struggled with that with me.
Jason Lee's obviously in it as well, someone that Kevin Smith uses regularly. Now, Jason Lee, I think it's fair to say, is not an Oscar-winning type actor. He's not a great actor, doesn't have great range, but I love him anyway. I think he has a really odd energy. He doesn't hold himself quite like anyone else. And in fact, the way he's kind of quirky and twitchy, he reminds me of a less manic Jim Carrey. There's kind of facial tics and twitches he does that always make me think of Carrey. And I love to see Jason Lee and stuff. And again, he's another one I've not seen in a while, since the end of My Name is Earl, probably.
He's always a bit sort of sarky with that dryness, isn't he? Kind of the way, even his voice is amazing, but he's probably just skateboarding, living off loads of money now. He doesn't give a shit, does he?
Down the Scientology Centre.
Yeah.
Is he one of them?
He is.
I had so much respect for him. I really did, because I loved him in stuff like Vanilla Sky. I thought he was up against Tom Cruise and stuff. He is a good actor.
That's probably when Tom got him.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. In Dreamcatcher as well. That film is absolute horseshit, but he's good in it.
I just always see him as Brody, you know, that lovable kind of kid that can get away with shit. He's the type of person that has a complete smile on his face at all times.
Dead to me now. You just told me about the whole science. I am annoyed.
And his fat brother from My Name is Earl is one of them as well.
Really?
Yeah.
God, they're taking over.
You've just completely pissed. I was enjoying this. We're having 14 minutes of loving Kevin Smith, which is a rarity. Now you've told me that. I'm actually... Yeah. Destroyed inside.
And if the Scientology lawyers are listening, we think you do good work. Hail Xenu.
What do we think of the poo monster?
Oh, God.
It was shit.
It was that. I've actually got it as a negative on my notes. Yeah. Was there really any need for it? It was just Kevin Smith decided to have his cake and eat it and then shit on it with the shit demon.
It looked like the DC villain Clayface, and he even said, one of the lines that the shit monster said is a Clayface line from a comic. So I get that he was paying homage, but, it was just a poo monster. What's going on?
Do you think some of it was well-directed? The flying of the angels, that looked really cheap and nasty.
It did look cheap.
I think it's serviceably directed or poorly directed, somewhere between the two. Because that's not his skill.
Okay, that's fair, but the writing is fantastic.
The writing's fantastic. He gets good performances out of people, which is a director's skill. You know, he can drag that out of them, which is something you need to respect, but he can't frame a shot to save his life.
I want to end on a positive here. What can I clutch to? help me. What can we do?
I really liked how it ended. It ended with Bethany not changing her mind by the end of the film. She'd met God, who was played by Alanis Morissette.
Yeah,
I like that.
I know, but isn't it ironic, don't you think?
No. Oh,
God, you're not having that.
Cut that out, Mark.
But I liked how it ended. It ended not trying to change her mind about anything. And yeah, she was given a child at the end of the film, but she still didn't know whether she believed or not. And I like that. I liked it wasn't trying to change the world in any way.
When this film came out, it was released by Miramax, Harvey Weinstein's company. And Harvey Weinstein at the time in the 90s was known as being this guy who liked to push controversy. He used to like to use controversy as a publicity tool. And at the time, Miramax had not long been bought out by Disney. And his plan was to release this film that, you know, that Catholics were up in arms about on Good Friday. And Disney went, no, Harvey. No, oh, Harvey. Jesus. We're going to get complaints anyway. We're not putting it out on Good Friday.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
I'm ready to score it. I think I've gushed enough. I wasn't going to spend the whole 20 minutes telling... Everyone knows my love for Kevin Smith, and I just... It was nice to revisit it. I haven't watched this film for probably 5 years, so yeah. It was quite nice to revisit it and know it hadn't gone down and was shit now, which is what we do sometimes with the rewatch.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Let's score it. Gemma?
It's a lot of fun. It's my favourite Kevin Smith film. It's my favourite Jay and Silent Bob film. So I'm going to give it a fair 8 out of 10.
That's good. I'm happy.
Really great.
Ben?
The look on your face. You're worried that I'm still going to give it a shit mark,
aren't you? I've got a glass to throw at his face.
No, I think in and of itself, it's a good, fun film. It's a great idea and it's well executed for the most part. It's an 8 for me as well.
Brilliant. I completely agree. I think it's a fantastic film. It's not a 10.
Mm.
Of course it's not. Even a 9 would be pushing it. There are faults with it, but I think as a film, as an actor, as a director, as everything, I think he nailed it. And it's his highest peak of his career, which is fair.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a shame he didn't really follow it up with something else and kind of went downhill, which is a shame. Mm-hmm. But we've given him his credit he deserves. 8 out of 10. Next rewatch, it's Gemma.
It's my turn. So I was flicking through the website the other day. Hang on.
Oh, I'm glad you finished that sentence.
Didn't let me finish there.
All right.
But
was that also that happened? Yeah, that's why you returned.
And onto the rewatch.
Okay, what are you flicking over?
I was looking through our website the other day, which is skiptothend.co.uk.
Yeah.
And it's brilliant, isn't it? Ben's amazing. Done a good
job. It looks so professional.
Mm-hmm.
It is a sweet website, which you should all go to.
And that was skiptothend.co.uk.
And it occurred to me that we've not done a type of film before, and we've never done a sports film.
Mm.
More to the point, we've never done a sports entertainment film. So for that reason, our next rewatch is The Wrestler.
Amazing. Ooh. Amazing.
High five!
That time again. It's the quiz that everyone loves. It's round two of High Five.
High Five!
So if you weren't listening last week, by God, you missed a treat. Go back, listen to that episode, then come back. But just to give you an overview of how this game works, we have in the pot a collection of 10 famous movie quotes. Gemma and Mark are going to be operating as a team, and they're going to take it in turns to pull out one of these movie quotes and then read it out to the other, and the other has to guess the name of the film and also the name of the character. You get 1 point for each. If, however, you have to give the quote a second time, that then gets reduced to half a point for each, so a maximum of 1 point for that particular one. Oh, the one thing I didn't mention, though, is that when they read out the quotes, they're going to be off their tits on helium. Just for a bit of extra added spice. So, guys, are you ready?
Hang on, we've got our friend here again.
Oh, of course,
hey,
yes.
Ron!
So we were a little bit worried before we launched this quiz last week that people might think that we're, you know, encouraging kids to... You know, use various substances,
suck
helium,
balloons.
And yes, yeah, you don't suck
or adults,
or adults, even them. You know, so what we wanted to do is make sure that we did our bit for health and safety. So we've brought along a chap who this is his field of expertise, and he's a gentleman named Ron. So Ron, thanks a lot for coming back again.
Oh, it's okay.
Did he sound like that last time?
Hello.
That's good. Yeah, thanks for coming back, Ron.
No, it's no problem at all.
And this is definitely not a danger to kids or adults, is it?
No, I'm supervised and trained, so go ahead, guys, and have some fun.
Excellent. Thanks, Ron. Take a seat, mate. Grab yourself a cider, yeah?
Cheers.
Ooh. All right, let's get going. Gemma,
right.
I want you to pick out the first one.
Okay, let's go for this one.
So you've got your quote, now you need to take a big old huff on that balloon.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Any ideas, Mark? Or would you like to hear it again?
I was worried this wouldn't be funny a second week, but I've already just pissed myself a little bit. Hannibal Lecter in Silence of the Lambs.
Correct. Yes. Mark gets a point. 2 points indeed. Okay, it's now Mark's turn. Mark, here's the pot.
I'm worried that I might die. I haven't done this yet. You guys have had a week of it.
You'll be fine.
It's fine.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Gemma, any ideas?
I know the film, but I don't know the character, I'm afraid. I think it's The Italian Job, and I'm just going to throw out a name. Bruce.
You've got 1 point. Because it was actually Charlie Crocker.
Oh,
yeah, that was the Italian Job.
That was
nice quote.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
he's been kind.
Yes.
Okay, Gemma, your turn.
Trying to get my mouth around it.
Oh.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Smells like victory.
The film is it Apocalypse Now?
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell.
Who's the character?
I don't know. Colonel Sanders.
It was Lieutenant Kilgore.
Oh.
Not bad. You still get a point.
That's not
bad.
Not
bad at all. Right, Mark, round two for you. Take your pick and take a huff.
I'm very important. I have many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
Ron Burgundy, Anchorman.
Amazing.
Well done. Yes. 2 points for Gemma. Okay, Gemma, your turn.
Okay.
You've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Oh, fuck.
I get it to do that again.
Yeah, do it again.
Okay. Thanks.
You've got to ask yourself one question. do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
I have completely mind blank. I'm going to go for Goodfellas.
I'm afraid not.
Oh, it's something like that.
It was Harry Callahan in Dirty Harry.
Oh, it was worth it just to listen to it twice. It's the fact that you did a bit more of a different pitch as well.
I do.
She was getting into character. That's right. Yeah.
Method.
Your turn, Mark.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Don Corleone, The Godfather.
It
amazing.
Is, yeah, it is. 2 points.
Much better than this than the last episode.
The quotes were incredible.
They are just the best.
Okay, Gemma, it's your turn again. You got enough helium there.
What's the score?
Let's do it.
The score at the minute, you've got 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Okay. That's not bad.
It's not bad at all.
It's a good score.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think he's fucked up there. Hey, it's pretty good. Fair play. This is how much of an arsehole I am.
Yeah.
The most incredible Christmas film ever, and Bruce Willis nails it in that role. But I want to hear it again.
Can I have your balloon?
Yippee-yay-ki-yay, motherfucker!
I don't remember Bruce Willis saying it like Eric Cartman, but okay.
I'll let her have her asthma attack. It's Die Hard and it's John McClane.
It is, it is. You get 1 point for that.
It's fine.
Oh, I'm sorry, I really went in on that helium. We're going to have to go for more. Sorry.
Okay, Mark, you ready? Gemma is absolutely ripped to the tits at the minute. So we've got to try and keep it together.
It's It's not even our drunk episode.
My precious.
I took too much in, that hurts my chest.
Ron, I don't think Mark's doing very well. Ron's nodding, it's all right, he said it's fine.
Honestly, my chest hurts.
The only time Ron can talk there, and he's just nodding.
Let me just have some cider.
It's Gollum, and it's Lord of the Rings.
That's incredible.
Lord of the Rings what, though?
Oh, the Fellowship of the Ring.
No, he's not in that, you idiot.
Oh, isn't he?
Not till later on.
It's the Two Towers, isn't it?
Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
One point.
It's worth it, though.
Let me just breathe for a sec.
Okay.
Right, we're okay.
Go on then, Gemma, your last one.
Oh, I've really enjoyed this.
Get your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Can we have an extra point just for the amount of effort she put into that?
No.
I'm seeing stars.
It's Planet of the Apes.
It is.
But I don't know the character.
Think of a name.
Thomas.
George Taylor.
Oh,
it's okay.
Oh, very close.
The final one.
Last week, Gemma and I scored 11, I believe. And at the minute, with one to play, you two are on 11.
Oh. Oh.
So this is to take the
lead. Oh, my God.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me?
I took too much.
Why do you have to say that to me? FYI, my boyfriend's name is Greg. That's just taking it to a whole new level.
I really wanted Gemma to get that one.
Oh, I can't breathe.
Neither can I. It's Meet the Fockers.
Yeah.
And it's Mr. Fokker. No, it's not. No, I don't know. I don't know the name. Sorry. John.
No.
No. Oh. It's Meet the Parents.
Oh, never.
Can you at least try and get the character so at least we get some points?
God, I've got to remember his name.
It makes it more interesting for next week.
Neil
it
Poir.
Does, yeah,
Neil
sorry. Poir.
So after two rounds...
It was Jack. Better give that away.
After two rounds, then Mark and Gemma scored 11, and Gemma and I scored 11.
Hooray!
Next time round, Gemma's going to be the quiz master, and it's Team Bark. Team Barky Bark.
She's a bit obsessed here.
So we'll play high five on the next round!
Gemma's just sat here huffing on balloons now.
Call an ambulance, get my medical bracelet.
Ron. I think we've got an addict on our hands here, pal.
We're almost at the end, so now it's time for some good old listener questions. Kicking things off, Holly McGregor has said, have you guys seen the new It trailer? And what are your thoughts on the fact that it's going to be a two-parter? Surely people don't have the patience anymore for two-part films.
Oh, I'm excited.
Wasn't the Tim Curry version a two-parter?
It was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If that worked, this might.
Yeah, I'm liking how it looks. It looks extra creepy as well. Yeah, I say bring it on. I'm very happy that it's going to be a two-parter. More scares.
I don't know how long the gap's going to be, because obviously people do lose patience. Mm-hmm. Is it one of the... What's that wank film? That's
Twilight.
Twilight. Exactly, yeah. That.
Brilliant. Well done.
Oh yeah.
After a year.
Yeah.
I think people lose interest. So I hope it's after 6 months. I don't want to be waiting a couple of years for the next one. But the trailer looked quite Stranger Things. It looked pretty good.
It's got Will from Stranger Things as well, isn't it?
There you go.
I mean, if the teens were like frothing for like Twilight, us horror fans will be looking forward to it.
Frothing. That's very graphic.
Frothing.
Did you see it?
I didn't watch the trailer now, but I'm kind of looking forward to it because I do like the original very much. Mm. It's one of the few horrors that I genuinely like.
At Dennis PK, I need some more book ideas. You guys have completely spoilt me with Amazon. Anything that you want to give to the mix?
I've got to think now.
I read a book not so long ago called Killer Instinct by a woman called Jane Hampshire, who is was a movie producer. And she was one of the producers on Natural Born Killers. And this book tells the whole story of her and her production partner, Don Murphy, buying the script from Tarantino, going through a variety of directors, finally setting on Oliver Stone, and all the ups and downs, mostly downs, they went through in the production of this film. And it's a fantastic book. If you have any interest whatsoever in the behind-the-scenes going-ons in film production, read Killer Instinct by Jane Hampshire.
Top that, Gemma.
I don't know if I can. I read a book a good few months ago, but it's still stuck with me. It's a book by Sarah Waters called The Little Stranger. If you like ghost stories, if you like sort of suspenseful, kind of British, old-fashioned kind of stories like that, you'll love this. So, yeah.
Ben's going to rip me one here, but it is a very good book. My Boring Ass Life by Kevin Smith. It is, like, honestly, if you like the behind-the-scenes stuff and all the stuff you're talking about, it is very interesting. And when he did have these big deals with Miramax and went to these film festivals and stuff, it is mind-blowing to see what he actually had to do to get these films there. And as you know, he did it as a bit of a take the piss. And it all went kaboom. So it's a good, interesting read. Ian Evans has said, what are your thoughts on the scoring system by IMDb and Rotten Tomatoes? It does blow my mind that Interstellar right now doesn't have the same rating as Get Out.
Yeah.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because you can... It's all down to the public, isn't it? If they give stuff a 10 or a 1. Yeah. But do you trust it? Do you go on there and look at the 9.8 or the 7.6 and judge a film?
No, not really, no. Because IMDb I don't trust at all, because as you say, it's public vote. And what you will get are political votes. You will get people who will purposely downvote things that go against their politics, whether it's a good film or not. So public vote things I don't care for. Rotten Tomatoes really lives and dies by the critical votes. I don't like Rotten Tomatoes. I prefer a website called Metacritic because they do the same thing. They're both aggregators, but they have different scoring systems. So for example, Rotten Tomatoes, what it does is it creates a binary system of good or bad. Essentially, if a reviewer gives it 60% or more, it's counted as good. Anything less than that, it's bad. Whereas what Metacritic does is it takes all of the reviews and then averages the score out. So sometimes you'll get a film that's on Rotten Tomatoes that's 9 out of 10 or 90%, whereas it'll be 60% on Metacritic because that they've actually averaged the scores. On Rotten Tomatoes, that 90% just means that 90% of the reviewers gave it 60% or more. It's not a good enough system. Mm. Metacritic's a far better bellwether for how good a film is, I think.
That's Metacricket.
Metacricket. Metacricket.
That's where they bat the scores for you.
Yeah. Do you bother paying attention?
Not really. I think it's down to personal preference. If, you know, there's always going to be some people that don't like horrors. There's always going to be some people that don't like musicals. As long as you like the film.
Me and me.
Hello. But as long as you like the film, I think that's all that matters. It's down to personal taste.
I only use skiptothend.co.uk because Ben has listed all the rewatches and the main reviews as our scoring system. And all you need is what us three think and the overall final figure.
That's skiptothend.co.uk.
David Thomas has picked up on the fact, he's listened to some old episodes, that I was late for my wedding for Napoleon Dynamite. Ben and Gemma, what film for you is worthy of being late to your own wedding for?
Ben's going to say Blade Runner. Of course I am. It's my favourite film. It's worthy of missing anything. First childbirth, any of that.
Shaun of the Dead.
Okay.
You watch it from the start. There's no way you can up and leave. So definitely Shaun of the Dead.
When Gemma does get married, because it will happen at some point.
Yeah,
you know,
you're listening, Greg.
We will, we will make sure that we get her drunk in the morning and watch Shaun the Dead and make her late to prove that you actually aren't just lying on this podcast to sound cool.
That's a plan.
Quinn Jupiter has put, who would you like to choose to narrate your life and you're not allowed to choose Morgan Freeman?
Matt Berry.
Oh, he has got a lovely voice, hasn't he?
Definitely Matt Berry.
I would say after watching her, Scarlett Johansson, and not just because she's sexy, but I love her. I said this to you on the way back, didn't I, Ben, from the cinema? I love her accent, that kind of New York, bit deeper. It's not very sort of feminine, is it? It's a bit more
a husky. Husk. Yeah,
that's the word. Husk. I love her voice. So I've heard her orgasm on her, and I've had like lots of orgasms to discuss my life.
I would want Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh, yes!
Oh, Ben was born in 1983!
Little tip for next week on the game show. If you could bring some Police Academy quotes.
Noted. Noted.
This is Shashin. Has put S-H-A-S-H-A-H-I-N. Shashin?
Shahin.
Whatever his name is, he'll know who it is. He's had his moment. Movie confession time. He's never ever seen a Terrence Malick film.
Good. Lucky boy.
Off each of you, I want you to admit on air now a film that is crucial to any film collector that you haven't seen.
Citizen Kane.
Lawrence of Arabia.
Citizen Kane. Shocking. People say it's the film.
Yeah.
People like talk about it up there with The Birds and
The Room.
But it's true. We've never seen it.
Yeah.
Shocking. What was yours?
Lawrence of Arabia. Never.
To be be fair, mate, Terrence Malick, not seen any of his films. It's good.
Yeah, other than The Thin Red Line.
Yeah, watch that.
Avoid.
James Bottrell. Ben, are you interested now in the Dirty Rotten Scoundrels remake, knowing that Chris Addison has been attached?
Short answer, no, because Rebel Wilson's still in it. But long answer, no, but, because I do like Chris Addison a lot. So Chris Addison was one of the stars of The Thick of It, and he's then gone over to the US to be one of the directors and producers on Veep, which is a fantastic show. And I like him a lot. I like his work. So if anyone's going to do a good job, it could be him. But it's still got Rebel Wilson in it and Anne Hathaway. So no, I am not interested at all.
Skip the End won't be reviewing that in any future episodes. Cave Art Films has said, now that we have Akira in the works and now we've just had Ghost in the Shell, are you worried Hollywood is going to raid the whole manga backcat?
Mm-hmm.
Indeed I am. But before we answer that question fully, did you see this week which director has been linked with the Akira remake?
Yeah, Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele.
Bloody hell.
Mm. And that could be very interesting because, one, you know, he's a new young guy with fresh ideas. Even though I didn't like Get Out, I liked some of the stuff he did with it. Plus the fact Jordan Peele is a known nerd.
Oh, yeah.
I don't doubt for a second that he's a huge fan of the original material and will fight to keep it as true to that as possible. So if anyone's going to do it, I'm glad it's him. But, yeah, I think there's too much of just raiding ideas. But it's not just anime that it happens. You know, it happens everywhere. Foreign films that did well overseas, we remake them in Britain and America. Films based on cartoons. There are no new ideas in Hollywood. That's the problem.
There needs to be. We need to have a change. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just, I mean, recycling's good for the planet, not necessarily for Hollywood.
That's a t-shirt and a half in Topshop in a nice big black font. Yeah. I love that.
Sell it for 50 quid.
Just leave it all alone. I think just come up with original ideas. I think we've seen that Ghost in the Shell didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
And I just worry that it's going to now start this whole trend and snowball effect of getting in every bloody week. We get this trend in the movie industry. Leave it alone now. Look at Ghost in the Shell. It didn't work. Knock it dead.
And there's some great writers out there. Just give them a chance, Hollywood.
Phil Bradby has put, have you ever thought of doing YouTube videos of the podcast?
No.
No, we are faces for the radio.
Yeah.
Correct. And we have to edit out so much that we say that is downright despicable or illegal, that we couldn't do live videos. It would be too choppy if we had to edit out all the shit.
Most of that's from me, to be fair.
Yeah, it is.
Potty mouth.
And Gemma's given people videos most weeks now. Anyway, little short snippets and trailers and random stupid ones that you're doing. But you're getting the videos of Gemma. Me and Ben might do a video one day.
Nope.
Mate, I want to do a remake of...
Well, like Titanic.
No, what's the one where they go Heath Ledger in the tent?
Oh, what? Brokeback Mountain.
Brokeback Mountain remake with Mark and Ben. Yeah.
As long as I can be the big spoon.
Yes.
I wish I knew how to quit you, Ben.
Jamie Wilson has put, any more Skip to the End shirts or merch coming out?
Big time. Of course there will be at some point.
Dark Bunny have already said that the demand for the t-shirts has been that high, they will do a new run.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to wait because they just can't print them quick enough.
Yeah. Oh, so I might actually get one.
Yes.
Then. Wow. Imagine that, being in the podcast and everything.
Yeah.
You can go on the website, darkbunnytees.com, and paid for
I'm
one.
I'm not paying for a t-shirt from my own damn podcast.
And we have got keyrings, which you heard about.
Yeah.
So, and we will do more t-shirts. We're not going to flood the market where it gets ridiculous. So no. I think we'll have one at the end of the year.
Yeah,
maybe something big might come out.
We've got a couple of ideas, haven't we?
We always have. Carlos Five has put, with Emma Stone, Emma Watson and Russell Crowe being very crucified in the media for their singing talents, do you believe directors now need to start dubbing with pro singers? Because it's after that Beauty and the Beast, people have said she's pretty shit.
She did sound very auto-tuned in the film, but I don't necessarily think so. I don't see how Emma Stone got crucified, because I thought
she was amazing.
She was great, so there's some serious flaws in that. No, I don't think so. I think it adds to the story as well. I mean, if I started deciding to live my life as a musical, I'm not going to start asking for Ariana Grande to start, like, you know, filling in for me in the parts that I can't. I think, no, leave it.
It wouldn't work. Dubbing of anyone never works because everyone has a very unique tone and timbre to their voice. You know when it's a different voice coming out of that head. It would never seem real. If you want to have people who can sing as well as act, find people who can sing as well as act.
Yeah.
Again, I agree. I didn't like La La Land, but I thought Emma Stone was perfectly good. I, of course, haven't seen Beauty and the Beast, nor will I ever. But I'm sure Watson is okay. But if she's not, hire someone better. Yeah. Don't dub her.
Don't dub her. That's it. Don't. I don't have an opinion on it. I just think you've just summed it up perfectly. Shaken Not Nerd, what a name.
Oh, very good.
Have said that Disney are bringing out a lot of live action films now from their cartoons. So they've had The Lion King and they've had Jungle Book.
Mm-hmm.
Which of their Batcat would you like to see next as a live-action film?
It's going to be hard because they've pretty much announced the majority of their animated features into live-action. You've got Dumbo coming up. You've got The Lion King as well. Aladdin by Guy Ritchie.
I look forward to the whitewashing controversy that will follow Aladdin.
Jesus Christ.
They'll either cast a white kid and then there'll be a controversy, or they'll cast Dev Patel. Because anyone who's sort of brown, Asian-y, they get Dev Patel.
What films are they not going to touch?
Wreck-It Ralph.
Have you seen the title of the Wreck-It Ralph sequel?
No.
Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2. Terrible.
That is dreadful.
Lazy.
Shouldn't have to.
No.
I'm just thinking, when did I read that? Because it might have been on April the 1st when I read that. I'm hoping that was an April Fool's gag.
I got annoyed with the internet on April Fool's. I just don't like it. I was reading loads of stuff. Oh my God, really? I was like, no, that's absolute bullshit.
It really upsets me when supposed news sites do April Fool's gags. If you're a news site, you should never, ever purposefully have any kind of fake news, because you're just going to mislead people.
Mm. And that's why Skip to the End didn't mess around with people's heads or emotions that day.
I didn't trust anyone on April 1st.
I don't, any day of the week. Don't matter what date. Yeah. Don't trust anyone. Andy Cartwright has put, Stallone has officially left the Expendables universe. Do you believe that's the end of the franchise?
I couldn't give a shit. Next question.
Me neither.
I hope it does.
Move on.
And the final question of the day, EILFM podcast has put, what is your favourite ever talking animal movie?
I don't have one.
Yes, you do. Come on, think.
Look Who's Talking Now.
Is that the one with the dogs?
I think
not
so.
Just the kids.
It is, yeah. It is. Babe.
Babe. Well, I would like to see Babe and Look Who's Talking join forces so the pig like eats the kids and stuff.
And then he becomes a bacon sandwich, why not?
Keep your questions coming in. The best way to get them answered is go on skiptotheend.co.uk. On there, there's a link to our Twitter, our Facebook, and I've seen questions coming through on Instagram, so we see them all, and we'll answer them all again in 2 weeks' time.
That brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Another good one, but they always are, aren't they?
Should we do a bad one soon, just so it's terrible and everyone stops listening?
There are plenty of podcasts out there doing that. We don't need to join them.
It's true.
It has been very good. Next time round, though, will be a good one as well, I'm sure. Our main review is Fast and Furious 8. I believe that's what it's called in the UK. In the US, it's called The Fate of the Furious, which is a fucking terrible name. Let's be honest about it.
They should have called it The Hateful Eight.
No, it's been done.
Or The Fateful Eight.
The Eightful Eight.
Fateful Eight.
Fateful Eight, yeah.
Fateful Eight, yeah.
Or just Fast and Furious 8, because that makes more sense than any of it.
People know it then, don't they? Yeah.
Still surprises me they're bringing it out, because I remember after 7 they said because of Paul Walker they respect and not do anymore. Yeah. So pretty good that.
Well, apparently Bunts means more than respecting the dead.
Yeah, so there we go.
Always.
Looking
always.
Forward to reviewing that one.
Indeed. Whose topic choice was it? Oh, it was mine, wasn't it? We're going to do our top 3 objectively bad films that we love. And I can't wait to do this, because we've not talked about bad films for a long while, have we?
Well, most weeks I talk about them with Mac and me in the room.
with bears and wolves and...
In fact, I'm going to put in a caveat on this. We're doing our top 3 bad films, but you cannot, either of you or me, we cannot pick The Room.
Or Mac and me, because you don't know about it.
Fair enough. So we won't pick The Room or Mac and me. That we all vow to that, yes?
Perfect.
Yes.
Okay, good. Who are we mass debating over, Gemma?
We're going to be mass debating over Johnny Depp.
We are indeed.
Wouldn't be the first time for you, I'm sure. didn't deny it.
No. Mark, what are we doing game show wise?
It's the very final round of High Five.
High Five.
High Five. And it is indeed. The Titans going head to head.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Team Barky Bark.
Wow.
Back again.
Working together as well, not head to head. I like this, but we don't care about the score. We just want to play stadium.
But I also want to win badly, so we'll see.
We've got to beat 11.
We'll do it. We'll shit them. Gemma, yes. What is our rewatch?
We're going to be rewatching Darren Aronofsky's The Wrestler.
Oh, I must say, I'm tremendously excited by all this.
Yeah, me too.
It's amazing. Should we record tonight?
Yes. Let's watch The Wrestler now and then record the next episode. We'll also be taking listener questions, giving away a million prizes like we always do.
A million.
You've got to post them. You've got to post
50
them.
50 prizes.
Out. That's true, yeah, 50. Oh. Are you going to have to name 50 people on it?
No, I'll do it on Twitter.
Oh, thank God for that, because I couldn't sit through 50 mispronunciations.
That would be the episode itself.
Before we go off into this good night, though, we have got a new regular feature of the show that we're bringing in. It's where we're going to talk about something that we want to recommend to you guys out there, because we do a lot of other things as well as watching movies. We listen to music, we watch TV shows, we go on websites, we read books, articles, etc., etc. And we want to throw out to you our recommendations, things that we want you to go out and check out. They don't have to be new things, it can be old things that we've just discovered. So what should we call it? Should we call it Skip to the End Recommends? Or maybe even Skip to the Recommend?
Skip to the Recommend.
Skip to the Recommend.
So here we go then, it's the very first Skip to the Recommend. Mark, what do you recommend?
Well, it's going to be a documentary, and the documentary is called You're So Cool, Brewster, and it's a 3.5-hour documentary on the making of Fright Night, the classic 80s horror film.
Wow.
Nice.
Now, a group of British guys that are a very small company up and coming have worked together on this project, gone and met all the cast, got really good exclusive outtakes, interviews, you name it. You might have seen, guys, the RoboDoc. Stuff that's been done. It's the same group of people that have led on to do that.
Oh, cool.
These guys have got all the footage you could ever name, outtakes, all the outside stories that you would never ever hear. And these guys have put their heart and soul into it. This documentary is about £15 to buy on Blu-ray, and it's quite hard to track down. But they've just released Fright Night in the UK for the first time on Blu-ray, which has been years and years in the mix. I had to import mine from America and it cost me £60.
Wow.
It was that rare. They've released it now and I'm just going to plug it now. You can get it in Asda for £8.99, okay, this Blu-ray.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely unbelievable. But they've included as the extras 2.5-hour documentary as part of the special features. For $8.99, cool. You get the documentary and the film. The film does not look like it's 30 years old. It's a good film to own anyway. But this documentary, for any fan of filmmaking, for horror, for outtakes, for stories that you shouldn't really know that kind of kept under the radar, they've gone all out and revealed everything. So anyone that's a fan, please check out this documentary. It is unbelievable.
Fantastic.
And as far as filmmaking goes, this is the best documentary I've seen for years.
Really?
Even
I'm interested in it. It's a film I don't care or have not seen.
You don't need to care about the film.
I love the whole sort of inside baseball, behind the scenes type stuff.
And we're getting RoboDoc, which is all about RoboCop. And they've done it so well and got budget. They've been over and met all the cast in America. They're on to big things. And they love Skip to the End as well. So good on them.
Oh, nice. Lovely. Well, thank you, Mark. So, Gemma, your recommendation.
I'm going to recommend music. And I'm going to recommend Childish Gambino's newest album, Awaken My Love.
Wow.
Donald Glover is Childish Gambino, and quick fact, he got his name from a Wu-Tang Clan website. It generates your name, and it came up with Childish Gambino, which I think is pretty cool.
That's amazing.
I want him then to do a guest spot on a Wu-Tang song, just to
Please.
Bring it all together.
Oh, that'd be amazing. But he's done two other albums. He did Camp, and then Because the Internet. Awaken My Love is much more of a psychedelic R&B kind of sound, really influenced by the likes of Prince, D'Angelo, Marvin Gaye, and a bit of Sly Stallone thrown in there. For those of you who have not heard his music before, it's actually doing the rounds in one of the opening scenes in Get Out, a song called Redbone, which is just, if Prince was alive today, he'd be completely smoking this song. Absolute delight. It's about 10, 11 songs in. It's just a beautiful album. Donald Glover is an absolute lovely chap as well, but he's also multi-talented. So if you want to listen to a bit of funk, try this one.
Nice.
I'll check it out because I love Donald Glover's act. I love him in Community.
Mm-hmm.
I love him in Atlanta, which I think is one of the best shows I've seen in years. So I'm a big fan of his work. And he's going to be in the new Spider-Man film, I believe.
And the Han Solo film as well.
Of course, he's Lando. He's young Lando.
And he's going to be the voice of Simba in the new Lion King.
No, I don't care about that.
Bloody hell. But the song I remember from Get Out is that track, and it was bloody good.
And
so.
It's a sexy song. It's a song to make kids sing.
And I shall finish it off with a book. It's a book called Down and Dirty Pictures by a chap called Peter Biskind, and it came out in 2004. And the book charts the rise and somewhat fall of independent movie making through the late 80s, all through the 90s and into the early 2000s. And it mainly focuses on the rise of the Sundance Film Festival, which has been known as a breeding ground for a lot of the successful independent films. And it also charts the rise and fall of a couple of independent companies, film companies, but mainly Miramax, who I mentioned earlier. So that story I talked about with Harvey Weinstein wanting to put out Dogma on Good Friday, I took that from this particular book, and it's a fascinating book. If you care about independent movie making, you'll love this, because it talks about the creation and the success of things like Reservoir Dogs and Sex Lies and Videotape and all these really cool indies. One of the interesting things, because Kevin Smith worked a lot with Miramax, is when Miramax were first working on Good Will Hunting, it was a film that they put out, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were basically unknowns at that point. And they had written this script because they wanted to make something for themselves. So they wrote a script and said, we want to be in it and we want to get a good director to do it. And then Harvey Weinstein was messing them a little about messing them about a little bit. So what they did is they already knew Kevin Smith because Ben Affleck had already been in Mallrats at this point. So they went to Kevin Smith and said, Kevin, you've got a good relationship with Harvey. We need you to direct this film. Think of that for a minute. Kevin Smith was asked to direct Good Will Hunting. Now, he said no. He said, I only want to direct things I've written myself, which he did for a long time until he did Cop Out. But at that time, he said no. Thank God for that. Because Affleck and Damon's characters would have been played by Jay and Silent Bob. And Robin Williams' character would have been played by Justin Long.
Oh, my goodness me.
It wouldn't have been the same film, I don't think, if Kevin Smith had directed it. But it's a fascinating, uncompromising book. It doesn't pull any punches. It's really honest. And it's full of interviews from people like Damon and Affleck, Smith, Quentin Tarantino's heavily interviewed. It's a fascinating, fabulous book. Down and Dirty Pictures by Peter Biskind. Check it out.
That's
so nice. I'm loving this.
I've just got this image of, like, if Justin Long was playing the Robin Williams character, just saying, it's not your fault, in a dead seal walrus kind of outfit. That would be disturbing.
If you do listen to this and you pick up these things we suggest, put them on Twitter, put them on Facebook, and let us know if you agree.
Please do.
We see a lot of people that are joining on the rewatch. I see people going on Amazon and buying these DVDs, and then for the first time I see these people going, I've just watched The Thing and I've watched all these new great films, and it's amazing to see the response. So if we're helping you with these suggestions, you're listening to that album or watching this documentary or reading that book, let us know if you agree. It's amazing for us.
Definitely.
Please do. And I like that. I think that's a nice way to end the shows, isn't it? Our little skip to the recommend.
I can't get Simon Pegg to read that out now. Just
skip
for that
to the recommend.
Let's just also say thanks to Jason Mewes as well for the intro of this
episode.
Thank you,
Jason Mewes.
Taking his time out for Madness and the Method. So that's pretty cool of him.
Mm-hmm.
That's it, isn't it, guys?
Yeah. I think so.
See you in 2 weeks.